And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
Who owns our water? I guess it depends on who you're talking to. Most of us assume we have a right to our water. After all, without it, we die. And yet, around the world, water and rights to water are now the new liquid gold. If you think the world is getting tight over our limited oil supplies, just wait until the water starts drying up. Who does own our water? We consider some amazing dynamics being acted out in our own backyards when your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
I don't know about you, but late April blizzards seem mighty strange. As we speak, thousands of homes along the northeast coast are flooded. Global weirding, almost everyone agrees, is underway. Today we're going to be touching the rural areas of America as we begin the show with a look at what is being dubbed the new organic. For years, organic was the label of choice for almost everything eaten, grown, or applied. The demand created a huge market for fresh organic produce. It was healthier, tastier, and safer. And it was more expensive. But now, we're beginning to talk about the legitimacy of flying and trucking these fresh organic foods to markets literally around the world. But locally grown foods are getting a serious second look. And you can help make this much more reasonable food source a reality as local becomes the new organic. That's coming up following today's news. In segments 2 and 3, we take a look at a related issue, namely the profusion of bottled waters that are filling whole rows of supermarket shelves and appearing in the hands of almost everyone these days. There's a lot of questions about why those precious bottles of water have become so necessary. But the question takes on a whole new meaning when that tasty water happens to be drawn from your water table. In segments 2 and 3, we take a closer look at a rural area of New Hampshire that is struggling to have a voice in the future of the water that fills their wells, as a water bottling company plans to pump out over 300,000 gallons of water a day from their underground aquifer, bottle it, and ship it over to Italy. The story of USA Springs is a wake-up call for you. It's all coming up following the news. So now, the news. As I speak, the U.S. Senate is continuing its inquiry into the ongoing saga of Attorney General Gonzales, and rumor has it that Dennis Kucinich will be introducing articles of impeachment against Dick Cheney. There's a lot to be said about democracy in action. After a week of strange stories of animals which seem to be fighting back, it almost seems as if Mother Nature is flexing her wings a bit off the east coast of Newfoundland, kicking up onshore winds that is compressing the broken sea ice and trapping 100 seal hunting vessels. The situation is the worst anyone has seen in over 30 years. As the third and largest phase of the controversial Canadian seal hunt draws to an end, seal hunters are hard-pressed to find a way out of this situation. Laden with part of the 270,000 seal bounty, some sailors have abandoned ship. However, most consider this an unthinkable option. Stories keep coming in of the imminent loss of yet another extraordinary species. The Amur leopard is a latest addition to the list of critically endangered species. The extremely beautiful animal, of which there are only 25 to 34 left in the wild, is destined to disappear from the wild unless immediate action is taken to expand the range of this precious leopard. Like so many other species, the Amur leopard is about to become extinct because it cannot compete with the effects of human beings on its way of life. The expansion of farms, towns, and roads have carved up the available habitat into segments that do not promote their hunting way of life. And then there are the success stories which prove the point that we can do the right thing when we need to, and underscores the fact that nature is resilient. If given the chance, it can come back. The Grand Siberian Tiger, which had been hunted down to a mere 40 animals by 1940, has since rebuilt its population to about 600 animals. With ongoing protections, these animals should be able to remain a viable population. In an effort to curb greenhouse gas emissions in urban settings, a battle over the contribution of gas-powered lawnmowers had some boys and men about ready to support their ban and a return to natural yards. But a compromise is being debated, with Dianne Feinstein suggesting that lawnmowers, which reportedly contribute 10% of summertime emissions in some parts of the country, be outfitted with catalytic converters. Opponents of the bill, and especially Kit Bond of Missouri, where Briggs & Stratton is located, cited a variety of reasons why catalytic converters on lawnmowers could be dangerous, including shedding sparks and just plain costing the consumer too much. The regulation, if adopted, would not go into effect until 2011 for riding mowers and 2012 for push mowers. Proponents on both sides vow to keep on pushing ahead. And that's the news. A few reminders. 2 weeks until the weekly Earth Summit brings you the most important 10 minutes on Earth here on the Wild Side News. Plan to be here for the launch on May 3rd. So now to today's first feature. Local is the new organic. What's that mean? One thing that we all share in common is the fact that every single day of our lives, we eat food. There's a very interesting article that's being published in E! The Environment magazine about local is the new organic. And to help us get a handle on this particular topic is the managing editor of E! The Environment magazine, Britta Belli. Welcome to the Wild Side News.
Thanks for having me.
Local is the new organic. Give us a sense of what the storyline is here.
You know, the first time that consumers really realized they had a choice was when they started to demand organic food and made that choice with their dollars at the grocery store. And the organic segment of the market has been growing ever since, you know, some 20% each year. And that, in turn, has led to a huge growth in the organic industry. And now, suddenly, there's organic food at Walmart. You know, there's organic food everywhere. And so that kind of caused a lot of us to take a step back and say, well, what do we know about this? Now, organic has gotten so big. Do we really know a whole lot about this food and how it's grown? I think people started to look a little deeper and began to say, well, if I really want a handle on how my food is grown, what if I shop locally and get it from local farmers who I can talk to and really get that food when it's fresh and support the local economy at the same time. So it's kind of the next step.
One of the things that I find is so central to this debate, and I raise this question with myself and my friends on a regular basis. I've been associated with progressive lifestyles or alternative lifestyles in one way or another. I'm certainly a strong environmentalist. But I've also watched that morph into some very, very high-end forms. For example, the bottled water craze, which virtually now is almost universal, raises some serious questions about the efficacy of, for example, flying water from France or some other place across the ocean, creating all sorts of carbon dioxide and adding to the disasters of global warming, so that we can put a bottle of water to our mouth and drink, whereas actually the waters that we have in our local community here are probably just fine. And as well, we pay a lot of money for that. Climate change and as well globalization are actually influencing this discussion. Is it really appropriate for us to ship organic goods from one part of the country to the other? To what degree do you think that's beginning to shape this debate?
Most of our food that we see now in the supermarkets is coming from all over the world. And the average produce that we would purchase travels between 1,500 and 2,500 miles to reach us. And so, I mean, I think that's something that we have to start thinking seriously about is this a system that we want to support? It especially becomes a bit bizarre when we have the same produce that could easily be grown in our own communities or be purchased in our own communities, and we're instead buying it from, you know, it's been shipped from South America, it's been shipped from Chile, you know. It is something I think consumers have to begin to think about is sort of the global repercussions of these choices.
Mm-hmm. Your article actually covers a whole series of factors that relate to this topic. Why have we reached this point now? We're importing foods from all over. part of what you cover in your article is what has happened to the American farms, and particularly their need to really minimize the diversity of their crops. Talk about that.
Right. The majority of Midwest farms today are devoted to corn and soybeans, and a lot of our products are that we see, you know, all these kind of packaged foods and processed foods are made with corn syrup and partially hydrogenated corn oil and all this. We've kind of become a corn-based economy here, and instead are importing a lot of our other fresh produce and fruits and vegetables. This model has just become very heavily established, and it's going to be very difficult for us to really change that and to go back to small farming and to support small farms. But I think that's the impetus here, is that it's possible to start choosing local food again and to start supporting small farmers so that that can be a real part of the economy again.
You mentioned an interesting fact, and that is that certainly have added a lot of chicken versus red meats, for example, in an effort to try to move into a somewhat healthier diet. But chicken is pretty much corn. It's
right.
An interesting way of looking at chicken.
Everything has kind of become corn in the sense that this is what we're feeding the animals. In that sense, that the chicken becomes corn because that's all they're eating. That's what the cows are being fed. And because of our subsidies, and we subsidize corn to such a heavy degree, it's become sort of the cheapest product you can have. So that's what all the animals are being fed. And in a sense, that's what's going back into our systems. That chicken ends up with some kind of coating around it. I mean, you know, and that's, all made of corn as well. So I don't think we've realized the extent to which we are eating corn.
That is what's driving the American farmers to produce essentially soybean and corn. That's where the market is right now. But the part of the story that we wish to really move into is the transference of that form, which is primarily a corn and soybean-based market, into a locally grown and diversified marketplace and farming practices. What's happening in that trend line? We've talked about organic, for example. What is happening in terms of locally grown?
Certainly there's more farmers markets today. There's about 4,000 farmers markets estimated across the country, and so that's an exciting trend. And a lot of this is really well documented, where you could go online and type farmers market directory into Google and easily locate your state and what farmers markets are closest to you. And that's a great way to start to get in touch with what's locally in season in your area, who's growing things in your area. And I think consumers might be very surprised to learn that they can purchase a lot of things locally and that they really aren't that more expensive. And they taste a lot better.
Now, you know, and I'm going to make a distinction here because I think some people get a little bit confused. There's a chain called Whole Foods.
Mm-hmm.
And to some degree, there's without denigrating Whole Foods, but I sometimes think that people associate organic with high prices and to that extent, I mean, there's kind of a joke out there that as you plan to go to one of the Whole Foods markets, you better bring your SUV and as well the back end filled with cash because everything costs so much.
Right.
And I'll just leave it at that. And I think there's some truth to that as we get into these kind of Whole Foods and healthier foods, unfortunately, it seems as if we're paying a really steep price for that. But I live in California here.
Mm-hmm.
And when I go to the farmers markets, I'm finding that the prices are competitive. And in many cases, even better than I would find at my local large store and the Whole Foods markets. So I almost think we might start to change the dialogue from organic because there's an association with that it's very high priced, perhaps back to Whole Foods.
Well, I mean, I think the reason for the prices is that you're getting things that are being shipped from such a distance and, you're getting things that are out of season. Whereas when you're buying from the local farmer and you're getting something that's in season, there's an abundance of it, and it doesn't cost that much,
right,
you know?
Good point.
So, I mean, I think the selection that we sort of demand at the grocery store causes the high prices because we want to be able to get every type of fruit and vegetable year-round, you know, regardless of whether or not it's in season. So,
and you're also buying directly very often from the people who've planted it and harvested it. In many cases at the farmers markets, it is truly holistic. I'm curious what you're finding in terms of trends, in terms of experiment that perhaps are taking place to support this concept of locally grown.
I mean, I think to take it to the next level so that it's comparable to what's happened with organic, really we have to get the local food into some larger providers, into hospitals and into schools. And that is starting to happen, especially with schools, which is a very exciting movement called the Farm to Cafeteria Movement. It's in over 400 school districts now, and it really varies. I know in New York City, they're serving only New York-grown apples, which is kind of cool in the schools when they're available. And you know, so every school system does it differently. In California, there's many schools, over 100 schools, that have fresh salad bars that are provided by local farmers or local farm cooperatives. So it's, you know, that's really going to start changing things in terms of not only giving the farmers a larger market, but teaching kids to eat healthier and teaching them about how food is grown and what really fresh food tastes like.
I think personally every school in the country should be actively pursuing finding their local growers and talking to them and making business deals with them. But part of the challenge is the fact that the farmer takes a risk in the sense that they have to survive. They've got families and kids and stuff to do. And it may be risky for them to say, well, okay, what you want me to do is you want me to plant a whole diversity of crops and hopefully somehow I will be able to make a living on this. But that is what they need. So there is this transitional phase here where there's a risk. But the more that these types of arrangements can be set up, and that's what you're really promoting in many different respects, that really has to happen.
I mean, one way to really support that farmer year-round, especially in places, you know, where California, you know, you can have like sort of an abundance all year round, but in the East Coast and other places, that's not possible, is through the community-supported agriculture movement. And, you know, they're called CSAs, and what people do is they're almost like shareholders, and they pay a monthly fee, and they get weekly deliveries, maybe at a local drop-off point or sometimes at their homes, of whatever produce is in season. So whether or not the farmer has a great crop or a terrible crop, they've committed to paying them a certain amount each month to keep that farm afloat, which is another growing program and is doing very well.
Now, I grew up in the Midwest in Minnesota and Wisconsin and lived in rural communities at times. My grandmother had an enormous garden. She grew almost everything that she ate, and they raised chickens, and they had pigs. They really lived on that, and they canned a lot. And unfortunately, of course, we've gotten completely away from that.
Yeah.
But also part of this, the local growing initiative is actually probably gardening and growing your own.
Absolutely. And I mean, and that's interesting. You mentioned the idea of canning because that's something that really should come back into favor to some degree, either canning or freezing. You know, there's different ways of preserving food so that you can have it in different seasons, as opposed to buying things out of season. And probably in many cases they taste better and they might be more nutritional for you. I think almost everyone can garden to some degree, whether it's in a little pot in their, you know, back stoop or if they have a little, if they want to share with other members of their community, start a community garden. It doesn't take anywhere near the amount of effort and time commitment that I think people think it does, and it can be very rewarding.
The idea of having a New York or a Cleveland or a Chicago becoming totally reliant on local farmers is a beautiful image, but probably is not going to happen for quite some time. But I would think that smaller communities kind of naturally are doing that anyway. Are there examples where in smaller communities they are surrounded by rural zones where local stores are buying more from the local farmers?
You know, I think that's kind of where the movement needs to go next. I mean, I know about the Farm to Cafeteria program. I know it's happening in schools. But I think as consumers begin to demand more local products in their stores, that could happen as well. But I don't know at the moment, like, has this trend really taken off at any major chains or anything? I don't think it has. It's certainly headed in that direction.
Well, that to me is where it has to begin, because I believe that there are local communities that could really reach out to their local farming community and start to really define the crops available and as well needs, where the consumer can say, well, I'd like locally raised chickens, pork, beef, as well as vegetables. Almost all of that is available locally throughout most of America and could be handled. And I'm hoping that someone out there in a community will hear this and say, you know, that's a good idea. Maybe someone who owns a store in a smaller town. If, for example, in California, we have a lot of markets, food markets.
Yeah.
That is kind of a result of all of the growing that's going on here. And of course, we're fortunate because we have that year round. But I'm trying to envision a model where this could start to take off and people could really see the value of it.
it does need to be into a larger market. I think the schools are a great place to start. It's happening at college campuses, and once it gets into, say, hospitals, and it gets into, and certainly into larger chains, similar to organic, I think that would really make being a family farmer a viable occupation again.
I think what has to happen is, as well, corporations have to buy into this and start to think about ways in which they can help create healthy foods for their employees, and in the process, empower their local communities economically. And you know what? Everything tastes way better.
Right. Well, and I think that's especially true with things that are local and in season. I think, you know, when you buy a strawberry, even if it's organic, if it's out of season, it's like, it doesn't really have much flavor. The same is true of a tomato. And,
yes.
You know, so organic, it's wonderful and it's better for the environment, of course, and it's, you know, and it's certainly preferable to non-organic. But buying things in season, I think, can give us a sense of, again, being more connected to what we're eating and to where it was grown. And not that everything we eat has to be local, but I just to start thinking about where things come from can make eating, I think, just a more interesting process in itself.
Mm-hmm. So if someone out here is listening, what are some of the ideas that you'd like to promote that they should be thinking about that they can activate in their homes and in their communities?
Certainly to investigate where the local farmers markets are and go try them out, you know, and begin to support people in their own communities, to just go and learn about what is grown in their areas, and when food is in season, and start maybe thinking more creatively about their diets and how they can use those food items as they become available, instead of just sort of buying the same thing week after week all year round.
I'm a creature of habit, and I get into the habit. It's easy to do for years. We just, you go to the local market and you buy your food there, and that's what you do. But every single time that I've gone to taken the time to go to a farmer's market on a Tuesday or a Thursday or a Saturday or a Sunday, it's so fun. There's fresh flowers there and fresh food, and I feel so wonderful walking around with these bags, and I just get the sense that this is really great for me. And then what happens is, and this is just the truth, that next week I feel wonderful every time I eat. It's a terrific experience. So I'm going shopping at my local farmer's market here, of which I'm blessed with many on any particular day, but I'm going to do that. And I'm going to do this for the next couple of weeks, and because it is a matter of habit, too.
Right, it is.
If you just start to go and you say, gosh, this was good, and you go back a second time and a third time, pretty soon that becomes your habit.
Mm-hmm.
And it can easily replace a large portion of what you do, and it changes the way in which you even perceive what you're eating and how you're eating.
Right. One of the people that I spoke to in the article was a woman who runs a blog called eatlocalchallenge.com, and that's a fun thing that people can try. I know in September they're doing another, I think they do it across the country and even around the world, and people go and write their experiences, and they, for a month, commit to eating within a 100-mile radius, all foods within a 100-mile radius. So
that's a great idea.
Yeah.
I like that. Plus, it's fun.
Absolutely, and you're sort of sharing your experiences with other people around the country, and it's, you know, it's just a personal challenge. You may give up halfway through, or, you may just eat half the food that's locally grown, but it's still an interesting way to challenge yourself and to think about food differently.
Another aspect of that is that it may just encourage you to head out, take a little Sunday afternoon drive, which would break up your otherwise hectic, busy life.
Right.
And put you back in touch with the earth in so many different ways. I just took a wonderful drive this last Sunday, and it was, I need to do a lot more of that.
Yeah.
In terms of helping people find the Environment Magazine, where should they go? And also, if you have some other websites that they may find interesting, share those as well.
Sure. Our website is emagazine.com, and certainly they can link to this article and to some of the groups that we've spoken about. There's also, in terms of the Farm to Cafeteria program, a website called foodsecurity.org, which is a great place to go if you want to learn more about those programs or how to start your own program. In terms of farmers markets, really just putting farmers market directory into Google will, you'll find immediately the USDA's website with all the local farmers markets.
Terrific.
Great resource.
We're talking with Britta Belli, who is the managing editor of E! The Environment magazine, about a wonderful story about local is the new organic. It used to be called bioregionalism. I hope that word comes back sometime, because when people start to look at the concept of bioregional lifestyles, that really begins to be where the rubber meets the road. Britta, thanks so much for, first of all, taking the time to write this article and then sharing it here on the Wild Side News.
Thanks for having me.
There are so many great things we can look forward to as we reconnect with our lands and earth and communities. But sometimes good people find themselves having to take a stand for themselves, their families, and friends. That certainly is the case in New Hampshire. We take a look at the USA Springs controversy when your Voice of the Earth returns here on the Wild Side News.
Melting polar ice was a dirty look. Shrinking glaciers, a nudge. Then dying coral reefs pushed us, hard. Rising ocean temperatures and extreme weather, an uppercut. Then record-breaking heat waves hit us right where it hurts. Has it occurred to anyone that maybe the Earth is trying to get our attention?
We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. To find out how, go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.